seminar in mathematical physics. The first speaker this semester is Tror Barnatan from Toronto, and he will speak about trees and wheels and balloons and hoops.
Wow, it's wonderful to be. Thank you for inviting me, and it's wonderful to be introduced by an Italian, because you're actually pronouncing my name correctly. My talk will follow a handout. I hope you all have a copy. If you will notice, somewhere on the top left here and here, there is a URL, there is a web page for the talk with a copy of the handout. Also, later tonight, hopefully, there will be a video. The reason there is a video is because one of you might want to look at it again, but even more so, I want to encourage others to videotape their lectures. So, you know, Thomas Wilbacher may prove a wonderful theorem, and I will want to see him talk about it. So, learn from me. Okay? Now, and let me start. So, I'm going to construct a certain invariant. Hello, Ralph. And the invariant will be a homomorphism from topology to algebra, and it's going to be a little bit complicated. So, first, I want to tell you why I care about it. So, and also why I came here to talk about it. So one reason is because I had a conjecture that it is more or less essentially a complete evaluation of BF theory, of the observables of BF theory in four dimensions. And I said I had because I think that as of yesterday the conjecture is more or less understood. So, you know, there are always hidden faces and scary things that can happen in quantum field theory. But if none of the scary things happen, then I think this should actually be true. Second reason why I care is because it actually is completely computable. And this is the result of a computation. If you start from the Borromean link, you get an invariant values in trees and wheels. Here are the trees, here are the wheels. And I really mean computable. And if you look in the handout on page 3 or 4, the actual printout of the program that computes it is there. Sorry, not the program, a run of the program. And the third reason is that that invariant that I'm about to describe, when reduced in a way that kills almost everything, but not quite everything, what remains, actually for knots, it kills nothing, this procedure, but for links, I'm killing almost everything. But anyway, once you reduce it in a major way, what remains is the Alexander polynomial. And in fact, which is of course a classical invariant, and in fact what remains for the Alexander polynomial are formulas that, to the best of my understanding, are better than other formulas. So the typical formula for the Alexander polynomial looks like you construct a matrix in a meaningful way, then you compute its determinant, and the determinant is something that's very hard to understand from an algebraic and topological perspective. And the reason is that, well, you can either give a formula that take n factorial time to compute it, so sum over permutations, and then everything is very easy. Or you can give an algorithm that computes it in polynomial time, roughly n cubed, but then the steps that you see along the way within this algorithm are more or less meaningless topologically. The good news about the invariant that I'm about to describe is that they give you like stepping stones along this determinant computations, where you stop n times in the middle, look around you and see that you're actually computing something meaningful. Anyway, this said, let me start with the actual talk. So the structure is, I will spend generalized 15 minutes talking about a certain algebraic structure made out of topological things. Then I will spend another 15 minutes talking about, generalized 15 minutes, talking about a certain algebraic structure made out of trees and wheels, and the two structures will obviously be analogous, and then I will say in about half a minute that there is a homomorphism from one to the other, and then I will go back and describe the various features of this homomorphism. So the main thing is to describe the domain and the target space. Okay? You with me? Are you okay? Anna, is it okay that I'm asking if you're with me?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So, the thing, the topological things I'm going to study is ribbon-knotted balloons and hoops. And the word ribbon I will not explain, so just ignore it. It means nothing for the purpose of today's talk. So knotted balloons and hoops. What are knotted balloons and hoops? Given a finite set T of balloons, or maybe sometimes I will interchangeably call balloons tails, because for trees these will be the tails. Anyway, balloons, so the set will be a set U, V with elements U, V, W, and so on. And given a finite set H of hoop labels, or head labels, called X, Y, and Z, and so on, a KBH is an embedding of a picture that looks like this into R4 or S4, and topologically it doesn't matter which one you take. Now, what is this thing? So, it's made out of T balloons, meaning S2s, meaning spheres, and H S1s, meaning ordinary circles, meaning hoops. And all of these are connected via strings to a base point. And the base point I will often take to be infinity when I draw such things. And I consider embedding of these things into four dimensions modulo, essentially modulo deformations, modulo isotopy. Okay? Are you still with me? Okay. Now, so why these? Why these specific objects? So rather than answering, I will ask a riddle, which answers the question. So the riddle is, people often study pi 1 of a topological space, which is homotopy classes of map from S1 into X. And often they study pi 2, which is homotopy classes of S2 into X. Why don't they ever study pi t of X, which I hereby define to be homotopy classes of tubes into X, where a tube is a thing that looks like that, so basically it's a cylinder, and what I require is that the maps will be mapping the top rim and the bottom rim to the base point. Now, that's obviously a group. If you have a map of a tube into a space and another map of a tube into a space, you can clearly concatenate them and get maps of bigger tubes into that space. Why don't people ever study pi t of x? So, I'm leaving you to answer the riddle, but to find the detailed answer of the riddle. But the short answer is that somehow studying this is fully contained in studying those. If you fully understand those, you also understand this. So likewise, if I want to understand all sorts of knotting in four dimensions, it's actually enough to understand this sort of knotting in four dimensions. So that's one reason why I restrict to these. Okay. Now, examples. So the simplest KBH you can imagine is this epsilon x, which is the unknotted hoop. So it's a KBH with zero balloons and one hoop. The one hoop goes from minus infinity to infinity as a straight line. As uninteresting as it can get. The next example is epsilon u. No hoops, a single balloon. This balloon is, again, just an unknotted sphere in R4, not terribly interesting, but let me explain how I read this picture. So, you know, you see here a little tennis racket. The handle of the tennis racket is going to infinity, but the tennis racket itself is made of a rim and a membrane, a net, I suppose, tennisists would call it, right, Anna? So anyway, a rim and a membrane. So the way you turn it into a four-dimensional object is the following. First of all, the tennis racket is embedded in R3, as drawn. Now what you do is you take the membrane and you make two copies of it, and you take one copy and you push it up in R4. So you push it towards the t greater than zero direction, and you push it by an amount which is proportional to the distance from the rim. So the rim itself is not pushed, it remains in R3, but the middle gets pushed to positive t. And then the other membrane, the other copy, you reverse its orientation and then you push it down to t negative. So, you know, if you look at the xyt part of R4, you see this picture, which is of course a balloon. Okay? And then the interesting examples, and in fact these examples are the generators of the algebraic structure I'm about to describe, are rho plus ux and rho minus ux, and each of these has one hoop and one balloon, and you interpret this picture in exactly the same way as I described before. So this becomes, this tennis racket becomes a balloon, and this just stays as a single loop. Okay? Now, in R3, there is a singularity here. The balloon punctures the hoop punctures the membrane. But remember that the membrane gets pushed to positive or negative t, so actually in R4, this is non-singular, this is an embedding. And this is the R4 analog of the hop link, if you've seen it. And likewise here, the hoop punctures from the other direction, and that's sort of the negative hop link. Okay? Here's a more sophisticated example. So this is an example with two balloons and two hoops. The balloons are this one and that one, and the hoops are, well, the one that goes all the way around and the one that goes this way. Everything goes from infinity to infinity, so it is a KBH. Okay? How do we interpret this picture? So, several comments. First of all, here I didn't bother to specify which blue is over and which one is under. And the reason is that it doesn't matter. In R3 it matters, but in R4 if you have two strands, being over or being under is the same, because you could go from one to the other via rotation in R3. Okay? So I didn't specify the sense here because it didn't matter. Here, the hoop goes under the balloon. It could have equally well gone over the balloon, because again it doesn't matter. Because this is a tube. This gets thickened into a tube. You can make this tube arbitrarily thin, and then you have the exact same picture as before. One of my hands is now a tube and the other one is a strand, but still I can flip. So here I did bother to specify the sense of the crossing, but it really didn't matter. However, here it did matter. Here it does matter at this point. Okay? And finally, here we get a new feature. And the new feature is an interaction of two balloons. In fact, it's a balloon with itself. I suppose here it's an interaction of two balloons. Okay? So, again, this everything gets thickened into R4. In R3, there appears to be a singular line here. But in R4, the wider balloon, the wider band, gets pushed further up than the thinner one, so therefore in R4 this is non-singular. And this is indeed a knot. Now, if you look at it, this knot is not can be simplified a bit. So for example, you can take this sort of cap here and slide it out.
Can you explain what is a knot for you? So it's embedded of what?
An embedding of this topological space into R4 modulo isotopies. This is a KBH for me, yes. This is a knotted. This is a.
You're speaking about knots.
Yeah, so. This is a knotted balloons and hoops. A knotted system of balloons and hoops. Okay? Where was I? Here. So, right, what was I saying? So again, topologically you can slide this cup out, but after you do that, there is pretty much nothing else you can do.
So is it true that if you restrict to R3, then you get the, always the new lines give you an ordinary knot?
The what?
So can you specify, so there are some subsets of your sets of this garbage, which reduce the normal knots in S3, or...
I'll say that in exactly 2 seconds. Now, in fact. So this particular KBH is in the image of a map delta from three-dimensional topology into four-dimensional topology. The map delta takes a tangle. A tangle is a knot drawn inside the disk. So it's a part of a knot, a piece of a knot, but it could take a complete knot just as well. I mean, it's even more general, okay? So it takes a tangle into a KBH. And the way it works is, well, basically as the picture demonstrates. So the tails of the tangle becomes, or you know what, maybe I start with the strand. Each strand of the tangle becomes a parallel pair of a hoop and a balloon, a twisted balloon somehow. Each crossing is interpreted as the crossings here are shown, and the ends are interpreted as the ends here are shown. And I should say, first of all, this construction is mostly due to Sato. And the second point that I want to make, so the difference between a KBH and a tangle is sort of, you know, you can think of this as being Peter Pan and this as being his shadow. And if it wasn't Peter Pan, if it was me, my shadow will always follow me. But Peter Pan, the shadow occasionally does something else. So a KBH, a general KBH is more general than the image of this map delta. The shadow and the object might actually not be parallel. Okay?
I don't see the hoops here.
What?
I don't see the hoops. I don't see circuits. No.
Because they go from infinity to infinity. This hoop goes from infinity to infinity. So it's
but additionally, they also have a line which goes to infinity.
Oh yeah, the way I drew it is they actually don't quite go to infinity. They go near infinity and then they share a string with the balloon to go to infinity. Okay?
But where is the circle?
So yeah, the other side also goes to infinity.
Oh, I suppose, maybe I'm a bit loose. Sorry, where was I? Here, topologically, it doesn't matter if you, if you start at infinity, follow a string, and then follow a loop, or if you start straight from infinity, and then,
okay.
So, where was I? Yeah, so in fact, delta is a little bit more general. Like, for ordinary crossings, I told you what to do, but in fact, there is something you can do for so-called virtual crossings. Virtual crossings are crossings in which you don't bother to specify which side is over and which side is under. And I will just map these to local configurations that look as shown here, where the two parts of the balloon, so the two bands, actually do not interact. One goes over the other. And again, when this is interpreted in R4, it's a picture in which you have two thin tubes passing next to each other, not through each other. And when two thin strands pass next to each other, you can flip the direction in which they pass at no cost. Okay? So I don't really need to, I don't need to specify any over or under for this kind of crossing. So delta can be extended to tangles that also have crossings, virtual crossings, crossings in which the sense is not specified. And then you can check that delta respects the Rademeister moves, and also the so-called virtual randomizer rules, so sort of randomizer rules that involve virtual crossings, and a certain move that I will not show called the detour move, and finally a certain move called overcrossings commute, which says that you can slide a strand over a virtual crossing. So you can slide something from above a virtual crossing to below a virtual crossing, and the schematics of why it works is shown here. And so really delta descends to some quotient of that space of diagrams that that have both ordinary and virtual crossings. Okay. A few more words. So delta, you know, maybe it's better this way. So delta injects ordinary knots into KBH, so you lose no information by basically the four-dimensional picture contains the three-dimensional picture. Also, conjecturally, the kernel of delta is exactly this set of relations that I've described here, but this is still an open problem. And finally, delta, once extended to these virtual crossings, is more or less onto. So if you allow yourself to drop components from a KBH, delta becomes onto. So if you want to get a certain KBH, one way to get it would be to start from it with say two balloons and two hoops. You could start with a tangle with 50 balloons and with 50 strands. It will become under delta, it will become something with 50 balloons and 50 hoops, and if you drop some of these, you will get the one you wanted. So delta is more or less onto. Okay. Now, so far I've described a set of KBHs. Sets are not terribly interesting. They become interesting once you put algebraic structure on them. So I want to argue that KBHs have some operations. Now, what are the operations? So punctures and cuts I've already explained. Okay, you just drop a balloon or drop a hoop. There is also a binary operation, which is a connect sum operation. So if you have two KBHs, you kind of embed them side by side and then merge the base points. And that's a binary operation. You can check it's well defined. The more interesting operations are the unary operations, and they come as follows. So if X is a topological space, pi 1 of X is a group, pi 2 of X is an abelian group, and pi 1 acts on pi 2. Now, my story is not about pi 1 and pi 2. It's not about continuous maps. It's about embeddings. And it's not modulo homotopy. It's modulo isotopy. But still, the same operations or cousins of the same operations from pi 1 and pi 2 exist in our context. So if you have a KBH K, here is K, and let's pretend that it has components U, V, X, and Y, and it could have several more, and in fact these components could be knotted with each other. I'm just drawing it just schematically. Okay? Here are three operations you can do. One operation is head multiply, and it's the parallel of multiplication in pi 1, and it's head multiply of hoop x with hoop y producing a hoop called z. And what it does is it takes the hoop called x, the hoops called y, removes them from k, and instead puts a hoop z that traces first the path of x and then the path of y. So it's this picture here. Okay? And this is the analog of the obvious analog of multiplication in pi 1. But notice that it's a unary operation. It's not a binary operation. It's not a group multiplication. It's in fact a unary operation. The input is a single thing that has two components. You cannot speak of these components independently. they don't have independent lives, or maybe their independent lives are very dull, because they could be noted with other things. And if you split them and think of them independently, they're not interesting anymore. Okay? But even though you have to think of them as a single object, you have to think of it as a single object to which you apply a unary operation. Likewise, there is a unary replacement for multiplication in pi 2. So you can take the two balloons U and V, erase them, and replace them with a single balloon called W, W is constructed by connecting the two balloons with sort of tubes as shown here. This is again a single sphere, right? The thing that I've created here. And again, it's a unary analog of multiplication in pi 2. Okay? And finally, there is a unary analog of the action of pi 1 on pi 2. So, there is this tail by head action of tail u acted on by head x, or of balloon u acted on by head x. And what it does is it takes the original KBH, takes the balloon u, and reroutes its string along the hoop x. That's exactly actually the action of pi 1 on pi 2 in homotopy theory. Okay? But again, now it's a unary operation and it's defined on embeddings, and it's well defined, you can check. And this, by the way, is sort of what in three dimensions, this is the operation that you do to a balloon when you hand it to your child and you don't want to, right? You take a knot and you trace the neck of the balloon, you pull the neck of the balloon along the knot. Okay? You still with me? People with kids are still with me? Okay. Now, one last thing. This double slash is newspeak for action on the right. So I write my actions on the right. And it's also newspeak for composition done right. So when I want to compose two maps, with double slash, I first do the left one, and I first do the first, and then do the second, unlike the circle composition, which means do the wrong thing. Okay? So anyway, with this newspeak, these operations satisfy axioms that are remnants of the axioms of a group and of a group action. Namely, if M is either tail multiply or head multiply, and you have a KBH with three components A, B, and C, and maybe more, but at least three components, then multiplying A and B, putting the output in A, and then multiplying A and C, putting the output in A, that amounts to multiplying A, B, and C, is the same as multiplying B and C, putting the output in B, and then multiplying A and B, putting the output in A. So this is the associative law for tail multiply or head multiply. And again, it's a unary property. Usually the associative law is a trinary property. It takes three inputs. Now it takes a single input, but there is still a meaningful equation you can write. Likewise, a group action has two properties. So when you act on a product by a single element, it's like acting on the first and then acting on the second. And when you act on a single element by a product, it's like acting by the first and then acting by the second. So these two properties can also be written in this language as unary axioms. So first multiplying U and V. So first multiplying and then acting is the same as acting on U, then acting on V, and then multiplying. Okay? And likewise for the second axiom. Now, an algebraic structure with these red operations, and in fact also this red operation up there, the disjoint union, or the merge, and these axioms, and a few more that I will not specify that more or less correspond to having a unit and sort of other minor things that you get in group theory, I will call a metagroup action. So it's not a group action, it's not one group acting on another, but it's a variant, it's a meta-variant of that. Are you still okay? Good. One more word. Remember the map delta? So the map delta maps ordinary tangles to KDHs. Ordinary tangles have a concatenation operation. So I'll do it very, very quickly without details. But the point is that this concatenation can be called concatenate strand A to strand B, calling the output C. And then you can ask yourself, if you concatenate two strands to get a new one, and apply delta before or after, whether you can complete the square, how can you describe the relationship between the left and the right in KBH language? And the answer is that there is a new multiplication on KBH, it's called the double multiply of A and B into C, and it is defined as you let A act on B, then you multiply, tail multiply the two A's, then you head multiply, sorry, the tail multiply A and B into C, then you head multiply A and B into C, and that computes, this makes the square commutative, and in some meta sense, the ordinary tangle product is therefore a semi-direct product of pi 1 and pi 2. And that, by the way, solves the riddle that I asked at the beginning. So the moral of that is that, you know, suppose you want to compute the invariant of delta of a big tangle. What you could do is you could decompose it into tiny pieces. Each piece, you could compute its delta. You would compute the invariant of Z's, and then apply all of these double multiply operations in order to combine all of the pieces together. So if you have an invariant of KBHs that is well behaved under all of these operations, you automatically get an invariant of tangles that is can be computed progressively. And that's this, what I started saying in the beginning about the Alexander polynomial. But I'll get to it later. Okay. And the last thing I want to say is the algebra that I'm now about to describe, and which is the analog of the topology that I just described, is completely canonically associated with the topology. It will not be apparent from the way I will describe it, but it is completely canonical. There are no choices. Everything is forced. There is a canonical notion of finite type invariants of KBHs, and then from this canonical notion, there is a canonical way to associate algebra to this topology. So what I'm about to describe is not arbitrary. Can I move on? Are you okay, Thomas? Is this fine? So now I want to switch and tell you a generalized 15 minutes about algebra. So I'm describing the target space of an invariant now. So the target space will again be a metagroup action. It will have the same. It will have sets and operations between them, same kind of operations, and these operations will satisfy the same kind of axiom. And here they are. So let T be a finite set of tail labels and H a finite set of head labels. Then M one half of T and H, why one half? Because it's half the work. The second half of the work I will do later. Okay? So M one half of T and H, and this is sort of half the target space of KBHs with T balloons and H hoops, is the freely algebra on a set of generators labeled by T, by the balloons, raised to the power H. So in other words, these are sequences of elements of the freely algebra generated by T, where the sequences are indexed by the elements of H. Okay? And to be fair, I want to take the generators of T in T to be of degree 1, and then this is a gradedly algebra, and I want to take the degree completion, so I allow infinite sums provided the usual sense, like power series. So, example, an element of the freely algebra of T generators will be a certain combination of formal brackets, and then an element of, and again, these can be thought of as trees with trivalent vertices and leaves labeled by the T's, and therefore an element of M1/2 with tails UV and heads XY will be a list of freely elements. The list is labeled by elements by the heads. So the head X will go to this freely element, the head Y will go to this freely element. Each freely element is, a linear combination of trees regarding modulus sum relations, Jacobi relations. And by convention, I will label the heads of these trees, so the heads of these arrows, with the head labels and the tails with the tail labels. Okay? Is it clear what M1/2 is? Maybe I'll ask somebody who already knows what the freely algebra is. Thomas, is this clear?
Yes.
Sorry, Thomas, I'm abusing you. Okay, now I need to tell you about operations. So there is a tail multiply operation. Tail multiply operation will take a sequence lambda to the same sequence lambda. The heads don't change, so the sequence is indexed by the same elements. But in every tree, everywhere you see a U or a V, you replace it by a W. Okay? And it's very clear that this satisfies meta-associativity. So if you replace U and V by U, and then U and W by U, overall you've replaced U, V, and W by U, and that's clearly the same as what's written on the right-hand side. Okay. Head multiply of X and Y into Z is supposed to remove the X element, the Y element, and put instead a new Z element, which will look like the concatenation of the X and the Y things. Okay? So, algebraically, this is, you take the least lambda, you remove from it the entries labeled X and Y, and you put a new label, a new element to this list called Z, and Z will contain the BCH product of lambda sub X, so the original lambda evaluated at X, the X component of lambda, and lambda sub Y. So this is the BCH product of two freely elements. And if you haven't seen the BCH formula before, the BCH formula of two freely elements is the formal logarithm of the product of their formal exponentials, and you can expand this, and it comes out to be alpha plus beta plus the bracket divided by 2 plus more and more and more and more complicated stuff, but it's on specific formula. Okay? And then this BCH formula satisfies a form of associativity. And this form of associativity, you can check, implies that head multiply is meta-associative. Okay, are you still with me? And then I need to tell you what is tail by head action, and it's the following thing. So suppose I want to act on tail U by head X. What I do is I take the list lambda, it's a list of freely elements, so it has many, many, freely elements, so combinations of U's and V's and other tails. I look only at the U tails that appear in it, and to each U tail I reverse conjugate by the lambda at x. The lambda at x is just the free element corresponding to the head x. Ah, but I have to tell you what reverse conjugation is. Okay? So let me tell you what reverse conjugation is. First, I'll tell you what conjugation is. So the operation conjugate u by minus gamma, where gamma is an element of the Frege algebra and u is a generator. So this is an operator going from the Frege algebra to the Frege algebra, and it's just a substitution operation. So if you have an element in the Frege algebra, every place there is the generator u appears in it, you take that generator and you replace it by u conjugated by e to the minus gamma. Okay? Now, conjugation by an exponential can be written as the exponential of the adjoint action. So, in other words, it will map u to e to the minus the adjoint of gamma acting on u, which means u minus gamma bracket u plus 1/2 gamma bracket u minus 1 over 6, 3 gammas acting on u, and so on. So it takes a u and maps it into a Lie series. So it makes sense to substitute every place you saw a u, put this Lie series instead of it. So that's conjugation. Okay? Now, reverse conjugation is the opposite of that. So, reverse conjugation of u by gamma is you conjugate u by minus gamma and take the inverse of that. Now, here's a confusing point. Reverse conjugation by minus gamma is not the same as conjugation by gamma. And the reason is the following. So you see, suppose you've conjugated every u in your Lie word by a gamma. You would think that if you conjugate by minus gamma, you'd go back. But you see, if you've conjugated every u in your Lie word by a gamma, then gamma itself may contain u's in it. So now if you conjugate backwards, those new u's that were created by, that were inside gamma, get inverse conjugated, but they shouldn't have been. Okay? So, this is, by the way, should I say a little more about it, or is it?
How much time? What? It is a bijection.
So the operation is a bijection. It's invertible by some iterative process. But it's the inverse is not the obvious inverse. In fact, this is a similar thing that happens in the free group. So if you have the free group on a number of generators, say call them U and V, and if you have an element gamma in this free group, you can define an automorphism conjugate u by gamma of the free group, and the automorphism will be the automorphism defined by mapping u into gamma inverse u gamma. The inverse of this automorphism is not mapping u into gamma u gamma inverse, for the reason I mentioned, because conjugating u by gamma will introduce many, many new u's here, and if you just apply this afterwards, you'll be doing the wrong thing. Okay? In fact, for the free group, this might not be invertible, but in the Frege algebra, it's always invertible. Okay. Anyway, I think I'll skip the You know, there is another funny thing that sort of the composition of conjugating by alpha with conjugating by beta is not quite conjugating by the product of alpha and beta. Again, it's for the same reasons. But you get a certain identity instead, and that identity that you get translates to this metagroup action axiom, which is the same blue axiom as before. And likewise, you get the fourth metagroup action. So overall, M1 half has the same spaces, the same operations, and satisfies the same axioms as knotted balloons and loops. Okay? This is half the work. Now let's do the harder half of the work. Okay? So you take, I will define the complete target space to be MTH, and this is M1 half cross cyclic words in the alphabet T, where a cyclic word in the alphabet T is, well, a word with letters in T, but a word written around the circle. So I guess this should be an oriented circle. So the word will be UVVV, but this is equivalent to VVUV or any other cyclic permutation, yes?
So I think I'm lost a little bit. So a priori, you have only generators which are in the 3D algebra. Generators are labeled by tails.
Yes.
Yes, but then you are acting by heads on the tails. So you have a commutator of heads with tails.
No, but each head has a corresponding freely algebra. Freely algebra element associated with it. So you conjugate the so the action of M the action on lambda by
who is lambda
is an is an element of M1 half. So it's a list of Li words.
Okay.
Of freely words. And then the way this So action is a unary operation, it's not a binary operation. Okay? So the way this list sort of, the way you apply the operation, which is meta, the meta action of U on of X on U, is by,
I have a list.
You have this list, you look at the X component of that list, that is of that list. Right, this is lambda sub x. This is a specific freely word. And then everywhere within that list, every place you see a u, you replace it by u conjugated by that freely word. Except it's not conjugation, but reverse conjugation. Okay? Sorry, such is life. Okay? Anyway, so you know, here's another sort of picture of a cyclic word, two of them in fact. And I should comment that cyclic words on the freely algebra, so a cycle of trees, is the same as a cycle of letters. And the reason is because you can use the bracket to interpret a tree as a product of letters. So if you have a tree based on a cycle, you can just you interpret the vertex as a bracket, and you get a linear combination of ordinary cyclic words. So on this combined space, so on MTH, now MTH, an element of MTH is again a sequence of Li words indexed by H plus a single cyclic word. Not single, I mean infinite linear combination of cyclic words. Okay? So on this space, you can define tail multiply as before. You just, every place you see a U or a V, you replace it by a W. You can also define head multiply as before. You simply ignore the cyclic word. You take the X Li word, the Y Li word, you take the BCH product and you call it Z. And finally, you can define the tail by head action almost the same way as before, and this almost is where all the action happens. So basically, you take a pair, list of Lie words, comma, a linear combination of wheels, and you map it to the same pair where everywhere you see a U, you reverse conjugate it by lambda sub x. But before doing it, you add a little spice to the collection of wheels. And this little spice is a certain functional that depends on U and the Lie word lambda x. So I need to define a functional that takes a generator U and a Lie word and produces a linear combination of wheels. This functional has the following sad definition. It's the integral from 0 to 1 of the divergence relative to U of gamma acted on by reverse conjugation by S times gamma, and then after computing the divergence, you conjugate U by minus S gamma. Now, what is the so the key point is to understand what is the divergence. The divergence is a map from Lie words to cyclic words, and it is defined as follows. So if you have a Lie word, its divergence relative to the variable U is the sum of all ways of connecting the head of this word next to all U's that appear in the word. So you can connect the head to here, or you can connect it to here, and the sum over all possibilities. And in each case, you will get a cycle of trees. So this is again a linear combination of cyclic words. Now, I am not telling you where this came from. Okay? It came from a completely canonical construction. But, you know, I have 8 minutes to go, and that's not enough time to convince you that there was never a single choice made. Okay? Everything was forced. I'm also not proving the theorem, and the proof is not so easy, but all blue identities still hold. So when you add this spice, you still get a metagroup action. So you get an algebraic target space that has the same properties as the topological domain space. And therefore, the moral is, I forgot to say that there is also a parallel of the merge operation. But anyway, the moral is that if I wanted to construct an m-valued invariant of KBHs, then it's enough to declare its values on the generators, and then verify all the relations. Now, here's the declaration. You declare that the invariant of the trivial thing, of the trivial hoop, is that hoop label gets mapped to zero with zero wheels. Well, you know, it's the trivial thing, it's clear that you'll map it to zero. You declare that the invariant of a balloon, a single balloon, is, well, it should be the empty list of Lie words. Here, this is the empty list of Lie words, followed by the zero combination of wheels. Again, that's not surprising. And the only interesting bit is to declare the invariant zeta on the Hopf link and the negative Hopf link. And the declaration is, well, zeta of the positive Hopf link, well, it should be a sequence of Lie words, where the Lie words are labeled by the hoops, but there is only one hoop. So it should be a single Lie word, and that single Lie word should be in the free Lie algebra generated by U, so it will simply be the generator U. Okay? Followed by no wheels. Okay? So there appear to be no wheels here, but wheels are created by the operations, by the spice. So actually the wheels do occur. Anyway, Finally, there is a theorem, and the theorem is that, well, this works. This really computes an invariant of two-dimensional things in R4, and this invariant has a canonical, solves a natural problem, which again, I'm not showing because I have limited time, but it's the unique homomorphic universal finite type invariant of the object I am studying. There is a lot more to say about it, and in fact, a lot of it is in a paper which you can find in this URL, joint with Giugiano Dancio, and it's closely related to a very large number of other things, so configuration space integrals, associators, the Kashiwara-Wern problem, but again, you know, and I've given talks about all of these things in the past, and these are some of those handouts compressed into complete unreadability. But again, I don't have the time to tell you, so very, very quickly, I will go through what you will get if you will, you know, listen to my other talks or read the paper. Yes, Anna?
So I want to just understand, so for example, how the Jacobian identity looks topologically.
Sorry? Where will the Jacobian identity come in topology?
Exactly, how it looks like. Is it easy to explain? So, I mean, if the hooks are generators,
well,
what does the computation?
You know, it's easy to explain given enough time in which to build all the structure. But yeah, sorry. You know, that's the nature of sort of math talks, right? You only get the flavor, you can't...
I tried to get the flavor.
Yeah, so, you know, if you've seen finite-type invariants, the Jacobi identity arises in the same way. Namely...
EHX.
What? Namely, it's this IHX. It arises in the exact same way with tiny variations because the rules of the game are slightly different because we're in 4D instead of 3D, but it's in principle similar. So I just want to go through the highlights once again. Everything is completely computable, and I really mean computable in the sense that I have the programs to compute it, and you can link to them from the URL on the page. On the handout that I gave you, and in fact, you know, I like this. Nobody ever appreciates this, but I really like this slide. You actually get trees and wheels. Okay. Once you choose a finite dimensional Lie algebra, well, those trees and wheels can be interpreted as formulas inside this specific Lie algebra. And therefore, the invariant can be interpreted as being a Lie algebraic invariant valued, again, I mean, I can be specific about where in the Lie algebra, but I'm not being specific, but it's some Lie algebraic invariant, which is, so given a Lie algebra, you get given a finite dimensional Lie algebra, you get a specific invariant of KDHs with values in spaces that are associated with that Lie algebra. And the same thing you can get out of the BFT QFT, and here's a picture of somebody who who did great things about it, I guess, along with Carlo Rossi, and in as much as we can tell, the invariant actually, so when you specialize the universal invariant to a specific Lie algebra, you get the BF invariant of the KBH associated to that Lie algebra. And there is a certain quotient that I don't have time to describe, which kills almost everything. So if you mod out by an additional relation, somehow a vertex in these trees can be replaced by a wheel and something without a vertex. So if you mod out by this relation, what remains is almost completely commutative. So instead of getting spaces of exponential size, like the 3D algebra and like cyclic words, you get spaces that can be described in terms of power series in commuting variables. And once you go into this quotient, all of the ingredients become completely describable by ordinary power series in commuting variables. These are still extremely ugly formulas, so you can ask if we can simplify, so you can do some change of variable, and again, I'm not telling you what it is because I'm not telling you anything, but after you do that, you get formulas that are completely polynomial, in fact, sorry, rational. And these formulas evaluate, when you restrict them from KBHs to tangles to knots, they evaluate the Alexander polynomial in a manifestly polynomial way, which in manifestly polynomial time, while keeping the fact that along the evaluation every step has a topological interpretation. Because every step of the evaluation is one of these applications of these KBH operations that I defined at the beginning. And I'll stop here with my usual propaganda.
Thank you. Questions? Comments?
I might have one question, which is at the same time an advertisement for next week's seminar talk. So there's this work of Victor Turchin, and the advertisement is that he will speak at this place next week. What he computed is essentially the rational homotopy type of spaces of long knots, where long knots in arbitrary dimensions, so you have a k-dimensional thing embedded in an n-dimensional space. And the answer, in some sense, looks very similar to what you find here, in that he finds that rational homotopy groups are just given by what you called Chinese characters at some point, but you change the gradings a little bit. So it's essentially the same thing. You have kind of graphs that can have loops, that can have also more loops, not just one. And it looks a bit like what you find here is the genus zero, so like the tree part and the one loop part. And also there's this extra structure, it has an EK structure, which is somehow, this seems very close to the algebraic structures you define. Can you compare this, or is it something completely different?
The short answer is no, because I cannot compare something that I know with something that I don't know. Though I've heard Turchin before, and I cannot compare in an even deeper sense. So typically he is talking about I'm talking about this invariance of connected components of the space of embeddings, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning individual KBHs. And he's talking about families of KBHs, the homotopy type of that space.
Yes.
So we're somehow talking about different things, and I genuinely and deeply do not understand why they come out similar.
I mean, he's talking about the homotopy fiber, right? So he's he's talking about, if you wish, knots that are close to some base knot, but you may deform it without with sliding things through others, right? He's not talking about the whole space, but
Still he's talking about I'm talking about invariance of individual objects, and he's talking about families of objects.
Yes.
And why the answers are similar, you probably know better than me. If anybody knows, it must be you, because... But I definitely don't know. Okay? Maybe I'll say that much of what is said here is somehow not a big surprise, because sort of all along people knew that, you know, there are tree invariants and wheel invariants, okay? But in ordinary knot theory, they are much harder to compute. And the real thing that happens here is that a part of it becomes completely polynomial to compute, and the other part maybe is not polynomial to compute, but at least is computable, which is hardly the case for previous similar theories of the same nature. Okay.
Any other question? So in particular, you have invariance of embedded spheres up to isotropy?
Well, in string spheres. So embedded spheres that are connected by a string to a common base point. A common base point. If it's a single sphere, then you don't need the string.
Right.
But if you have several, they have to be connected to a single base point. Now, I mentioned before, well, you know, that was the riddle that I asked at the beginning, that sort of much of much more homotopy theory can be recovered if you fully know pi 1 and pi 2. So there is a similar thing here. Actually, I can recover an invariant of embedded spheres of without the strings connecting to infinity, but it requires extra work that was not shown today.
Right, so this is kind of a naive generalization of a knot in four dimensions, right? An embedded sphere, right? And so you have, so for instance, in your Alexander polynomial case, you have an invariant for this. Was it known before? Are there already classical invariants for such dimensions?
The Alexander polynomial exists for such, had existed before for such things. But the Alexander polynomial part of my talk is no news. Sorry, the invariant is no news. This particular way of evaluating is new. But if you're looking for a new invariant, it would be before you modded out by all the things that that make it Alexander polynomial. So I don't think, sorry, where is it? Tree invariants are the Milner invariants, and this is precisely the Milner invariants, up to some change of basis, which I think I understand. The wheels, I don't think I've seen before.
For embedding of a single sphere, it is a
no. For a single sphere, this will be wheels colored by a single color. So this will be an ordinary commutative power series, and in fact, it's essentially the Alexander polynomial. If you have more than one color, I have no topological. So the topological interpretation for the answer is this is the universal solution of the finite type problem. But I have no kind of old style topology answer, like, you know, it comes from covering spaces, something.
Any other question? Comments? If not, let's thank the speaker again.